Yat A, hello. Welcome to Real Native Roots, Untold Stories, a podcast by a Native woman with deep roots, hosted by yours truly, Vicky Kutsuli Boy Oldman. I am a lover of stories, a connector, and a holder of wisdom keepers. Each month, we will be connecting with our Native relatives and exploring what medicine our guests share and offer to us. Please join me on this uncharted journey to learn, connect, and reflect. Ayahat. Thank you. I love hearing all of the analogies about music and how it's healing and how it has helped you. And you talked a little bit about the movie industry. You've done over 27 different movies. And I wanted to ask you, has there been any other racial stereotype conflicts in your acting career besides the Ridiculous Six?
Yeah, there has been. So it's actually 43 films.
43 films?
Yeah. IMDb doesn't have all of the listings of everything on there, but throughout my whole career, I've done 43 movies. Finally worked my way up to lead actor stuff now, which has been quite a battle to get to.
And what was hard about that?
It's just the struggle of taking a lot of rejection. Mm. So I audition anywhere from 2 to 5 times a week prior to the pandemic. So you're looking at a lot of different auditions that are happening throughout the year. Even during the pandemic, I was fortunate to still have auditions as a performer that I was still being sought for during the pandemic. I still did like 8 different films during that time frame. Now getting into the lead stuff and going against the big guys, which is putting yourself through the most prep possible. Mm. You're prepping your mind, your body, everything, every emotion and experience that you've gone through has led to this point. Just like us right here, I don't feel anything is coincidence in my life. If I feel like everything I'm saying to you, Gavin, is like everything I'm saying to every young man out there that's listening to this. And it's for you as well.
Yeah.
So it's coming together really great. As you're journeying in these different aspects of trying to make it in something, it takes time. And I think that's one of the biggest things people don't realize is it takes time to be ready for those opportunities. Because if I wasn't ready for the stuff that's going on now, I definitely would crack. Maybe I might relapse. Who knows? It's unpredictable. The thing about that is if you stay on your grind, you stay on the things that you need to do, it'll eventually come about. All the little things add up just the same way as that steak adds up. Just the same way as all the workouts add up, the food that you eat, the stuff that you, the people you hang out with, whatever they're doing, you're going to eventually do. If you have a bad crowd of people you're hanging out with, that's what's going to happen to you. If you have people that you hang out with that are disrespectful, unappreciative, and are going to run over other people, and that's the way they handle business, that's also going to reflect on you. So we're a reflection of our lifestyle. Taking into like the acting stuff and how it comes across of how do we say okay to this and not okay to this is really digging deep within like, okay, where are your values? Where are your standards? Where are your morals and everything? Because it is a business and some people are just like in that get over it mode about stuff, but really it's about getting it right to a certain point, depending on how things go. Like I recently got a lead in a show called Modern Folklore. It's a series that's about some guys that ended up finding a creature. Okay, I don't want to give away too much in the whole thing. The writing in it was very goofy. So there was stuff in there that was like shaman, this and that. And then like immediately I was like, no, we're not doing that. I want to be a part of this, but let's change this. It's been great that I've gotten to a point in my career where I get listened to now. They listen to what I have to say. And not only in just film, but other aspects of my life. I built this road for myself that if anybody decides to talk negatively about me, that's fine. That's their choice. That's their right, if you want to say. But really, like, you want to build yourself up so much that your pathway can be seen from space, that you've been walking this road for so long that it became a highway that people can see from space. My term in acting in my career, my weight in my words mean a lot to people. And I'm really grateful for that. That's like one of the big differences in the things that's going on now is because when that whole thing with Ridiculous Six happened, it was like, yeah, get over it kind of thing. And then that was it. I got blackballed. And so I had to fight my way out of that. But I still stuck to my morals. I didn't want to sell out. I didn't want to like give in to things. And it's very hard to do that in this industry because you're walking in so many different aspects. But coming across now where I did said we're changing the script, the characters. So I was able to bring in a longtime older brother, Shinai. His name is Norman Patrick Brown. He plays one of the older Navajo figures in the film. So it was nice to do that too, where you have a say in things. Those are some really positive things where things can change. Things can make a movement, but you also have to walk the walk and talk the talk. So that goes in the sense of like, okay, well, who's your grandma? Who claims you? Those are important. You got to stay grounded in community. You got to stay grounded in your culture because it's easy to get lost in this.
As I was listening to you, it made me think about that experience with Ridiculous Six. You naming the situation took a lot of courage. It took a lot of you knowing who you are and what you believe and really standing in your values and what's important. I feel like because of that, I don't know, this is my hypothesis, is that people are watching, right? You're saying create a path and people are watching. They see that path. And now you have a new opportunity. They want to listen because they know, like, I'm from the community. I understand. I know this makes sense. This not makes sense. They know you're not afraid to voice what needs to be said. Now you have all these doors that are opening up for you, which I think is really exciting. 40, what did you say? 47?
43.
I mean, that's a big deal. And congratulations. I just love that we have more and more of our native indigenous people in the movie industry, in the music industry. I just hope that folks continue to stay grounded as much as you have. Anything in the horizon besides this? So this is going to be on what television, or is it going to be like on a platform like Netflix or what?
I'm not too sure because a lot of the stuff like is, again, unpredictable. People have their dream and idea. So when I get casted for some of these projects, it's, again, going back to that piece of paper with the idea. And a lot of times you don't see the end goal of what it is. You just want to develop it and see where it goes. So that, mm-hmm. that happened with like the other movie I was in called How to Blow Up a Pipeline, mm-hmm. where we did that. We shot it partly here in New Mexico and partly in South Dakota. The idea was to try to get it in distribution, but no idea how to do it because it was an independent project film, mm-hmm. very, very low budget. But it went to a film festival at the Toronto International Film Festival. It sold overnight. So that's how it got into theaters everywhere.
Cool.
So things like that can happen. So you don't know exactly where it's going to go with a lot of these things. And so with this particular project that I mentioned, they're looking at doing some distribution on some other things. I don't really know. I can't really say where or when on that yet. But the other stuff is like the same too. There's a lot of like NDA projects that I'm involved in right now where it's like non-disclosure agreements. It's nice. It's nice that I got stuff coming, but it's also frustrating that I can't share a whole lot. So.
Well, when it does, that'll be, you'll definitely be letting us know. Mm-hmm. So congratulations on all fronts. They're really, really excited for you. I thought this was really cool and it made me think. I looked up and I'm like, oh, I wanted to ask him this. It made me think about my little stand here. So I was telling Lauren that I had to modify something on set today. I have it attached to a chair. It looks like, you know, I got a Rez podcast going on, right? But it made me think about you in the backyard weightlifting with whatever you could get yourself in shape with. And that opportunity led you to be the first Navajo man to be on a fitness magazine. I think it was Men's Health. So tell us a little bit about that.
Coming back from my head injury in 2019 was all in that same time frame of restarting my old band, Bloodline, and things kind of falling apart and then just trying to figure out stuff. Cause like at that same time, like I was getting all these tour stuff set up for the band. And then I had 8 bookings for 2020 already. So I was planned to be filming in Australia, New Zealand, parts of Europe. And then I had stuff here in the States. A lot of stuff was planned out for me. I worked really hard for these many years. I'm really glad that I'm booking all these things and it's just going to be my year. 2020 is going to be my year, just like everybody else said. Our Chiz for Che stuff was seasonal at that time. Prior to 2020, our normal seasons were from like July into March. That was our working seasons. And we would take that few months off. Once we ended our regular season for 2019, pandemic happened. And it was like, boom, we just jumped right into mutual aid and all these other things that we were doing just never stopped. was like all day, every day. And we were running into the night, getting up early in the morning. A lot of things were happening. But at the same time, like I was also telling myself, I'm going to get in the best shape I can. You know, with the head injury, I needed to relearn everything. And so I had this goal of getting back to my old squad of 585 and compete again in powerlifting, because that's where I originally started, was powerlifting. And I loved it so much that I got into bodybuilding, did bodybuilding shows. And then after that, started teaching fitness groups on how to get in shape. And I called them Iron Warriors. So we call Mondays were Muscle Mondays and Thursdays were Throw Up Thursdays. And it blew up in Gallup. It blew up so big. Like we would have anywhere from 100 to 250 people on that football field working out.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I would yell at them and put them through the most pain possible. But it was all love when I was yelling at them, motivating to them, like telling them they've already been through the worst in their life already. And this is time to put the pain forward to make the best of themselves. Making that effort of like just trying to be better. So when I was working my goals to get to that squat, I was almost there. I hit a 495 the day that they closed the gym. I was like, I'm going to go for at least 495 pounds on my back. I haven't done that in years. So I was like, I'm going to do it because they're shutting down the gyms and today's the day that they're going to do it. So I'm going to go. And I racked all the weights, put all the 45s on, and that's 545s on each side. So that's how that looks for
me. Oh my God.
I don't know about crazy. That. I'm really bad at math, but I'm really good at multiplying by 45s. I remember putting that all together, going through the whole process, wrapping my knees, and then putting that bar under my back, walking it out, and then going for it. And I squatted that thing, and I got it up. And immediately I racked it, and I fell to my knees and I just started crying because I was so sad the gyms were closing. I was so disappointed that this, whatever it was happening to all over, because anywhere you go was getting shut down. At that same time, I was also hearing, sorry, Lauren, because of this, we're canceling the show. Because of this, we're dropping you from this project. Because of this, like everything that I had going on, the tours, the shows, everything, all my contracts, I lost out on a lot of stuff financially to sustain myself. And I just didn't know where my life was going. That was scary. And that squat was the only thing I had left. And I went for it. Glad that I did it, but it wasn't where I wanted it to be because I knew if the gym stayed open, I would have been able to do it. So I went through a little rough patch there because I was thinking like, man, I really would miss the gym. I was going so good at it. I was so consistent. And then I remembered the Iron Warrior days where I was helping people like at the football field. No weights, no nothing. It was your own body weight. It was like, to putting yourself through stuff where you can push your limits, but also grow and heal and get better and faster. I took that as me eating my own words, knew that I had railroad ties in the back of my house, had tire chains from when Chiz for Che needed tire chains. We had a bunch of buckets, so I put rocks in those and made my own kettlebell out of that thing. And I had a digging bar that my dad used to have, and I'd wrap the chains around the railroad ties, and then I would slip that bar right through the chains and twist it, so then that way I can do like a row press or something like that with the bar. And then I was able to make a bench press out of it. And I found some old weights eventually and started lifting with those. And in an effort to keep myself motivated, I posted stuff about me doing that. It was more like, I'm going to keep myself accountable by posting this and by saying that I'm going to do it. Because one of my biggest things that's out there is because I said so. That's one of my things that I hold big to myself, is that because I said so, I'm going to be sober. Because I said so, I'm going to be there. Because I said so, I'm going to help these grandmas and these grandpas. Because I said so, I'm going to be better and not bitter after this breakup. Because I said so, I'm going to be on top at the end. Those are things that I try to bring affirmations to myself. Posting things online a lot of times is me talking to myself. The things that I say to others is me talking to myself. Doing that attracted, of course, manifesting. It came about where people saw stuff, and Men's Health Magazine was one of them. It was really great that got showcased because we, as Native people, never see ourselves in a major mainstream fitness magazine like Men's Health Magazine. So it was great to be in there not once, but twice. That was, that was really sweet. Cool. The last one was with Lenny Kravitz on the cover.
Oh, I missed that one. Yeah. I love Lenny.
Yeah, so it's really cool. All these different aspects of my life, from the fitness world, to music, to movies, to community, to recovery, to helping people out. I really feel like I'm like the Navajo version of Forrest Gump, just kind of creating history and living through it.
That is so funny. I love all of this. There's two more things I want to ask and then we'll start to wrap up. But
I just need to say, like, as far as being Navajo Forrest Gump, I could be like, Jenna, I make a good husband.
Before we change the subject about you working out, and I love that you use social media in this way of like accountability for self. So what's your new PR?
I think my PR these days in the gym is more of just getting more people comfortable with coming in and seeing how things go. See how the gym life really is, because for a long time, I was all about the numbers. I was about, look at how much I can lift and how many times I lifted it. So now it's just more of like, I'm here at the gym and I'm just working out and having fun. That's what I like to promote now. And then I don't nearly go as heavy as I used to anymore. I mean, at my last session, I did a 315 barbell row. So that's like lift, you bend over and you grab the bar from the ground and you pull it into you. So that's that motion. But to me, that's light. That's just a fun, that fun anti-weight right there. throw around. I tell everybody, I was like, the best antis are heavy. You gotta go. You gotta lift heavy. She ain't a lady if she ain't 180.
You're so funny.
210. Count me in. Let's go. Where's she at? Breaking that down a little bit of having a good time. People are intimidated by me, if not by the gym, by other means of my sobriety or just possibly like where I'm at in the film industry. I have no idea sometimes. Like I tried to break that down of the mysterious side of things, because people do like to embellish that whole lifestyle of like, look at me, look at my little show and look at this lifestyle that I'm pretending to live when I'm not really living it. And there's a lot of people out there like that. And I scare a lot of those kind of people away. So in that aspect too, it's like people are scared of opportunity. And I tell people like, I'm like that guy. I'm like Arnold, my dad Arnold. I'm like my dad Arnold in Predator, where he's on the mud and he's under the ground in that ditch and the predator's on top. And he's like, you know, doing that noise. And then and then Arnold's down on there and he's like, he's got those blades because he wants to stab the predator. And then Arnold's like, come on, use me. Let's go. Come on. He's like, come and get me. That's how I feel about myself with a lot of my friends and my people, my community and my addicts, my people that need the better life. It's like, come on, use me. I'm right here. Everything. I'm right here because I want to help. I want to help people, you know, even with like clanship wise, like they talk about, you know, my relatives, my kinship, my people. In that sense, there's another creative bond that like, it's like instant love. Boom. I have a lot of granddaughters that I love because they're my granddaughters by clan. So therefore I lift harder at the gym so I can break their boyfriend's legs if anything happens. So there's many aspects to that, but I think breaking down that mysterious things of the gym is like one of my main goals and getting people to come in, because I think it's, to me, it's more about the people that show up now. Once you walked out through that door, I'm proud of you, because that's you showing up. That's half the battle for everything in life, is just showing up.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of help, you used the word help, and we have to let more folks know about Shiz for Chase. We have listeners not only just here in the mainland, we have listeners in Canada. I know that some of you all are from like New Zealand, Australia. Thank you for listening, by the way. Shiz means wood in Navajo, and Che is for grandpa. And how did you guys do this year? Maybe a summary of like, you did talk a little bit about it early on. We've been hearing about it throughout our conversation. But how is it going? What would you like people to know about it and support Shiz for Chase?
This past year, like a year exactly, it's March 2024 right now. So that whole year, 12 months, was my worst and my best year of my life. in the sense of everything, from all my projects to my personal life, everything went through a lot. Shiz for Chase, for this past year, we did the most we ever did ever in our whole span of 14 years.
Wow, 14 years?
My first 3 years were by myself, because I needed to get sober. So I stayed up in the mountains back at home. The Cheska Mountains is where I'm from. A little place called Tos Oze, which is, means the narrow creek. So I come from that mountain, Cheska Mountain. Majority, likely, I tell people, if you're from the mountain, we're probably related in some way. But that's where my umbilical cord's buried. A lot of Navajos had their umbilical cord buried at Walmart. That's why everybody went to Walmart when they told everybody go home during the pandemic. The thing about getting firewood at that time was like, I'm just going to focus on 30 loads for 30 families. And that's what I did. And eventually people were like, well, where's Lauren? He's not at the party scene anymore. Like, what's going on? So eventually they saw that, you know, Lauren's getting in shape, because I was almost 300 pounds before all the other fitness stuff had happened.
Wow.
And a lot of people don't realize that too. It was like, I went through the obesity. I went through the doctors telling me I needed high blood pressure meds, diabetes pills, all this stuff that I was like, this is wild. Like, it was all the touring, everything that I was doing bad, drinking, eating bad food, late nights, not taking care of myself, not working out. And so, you know, that whole evolution of Mr. Fitness had happened within that time frame of the beginning of Chiz for Che. My friends saw that. They saw the difference. And then they secretly in the closet wanted to get sober too. They were asking like, how? It's always how at the end. It's never like, you know, like it's all about like the things that had come, became of it that they're afraid to do. So eventually, showing, and that's what I like about social media is like, I'm showing, I'm giving you all of my secrets if you really are paying attention. And I'm giving you my lifestyle by a visual of observation. And if you're looking at it from that empirical standpoint, you're realizing that these are the things I need to do to enhance where I'm going. So looking at Chiz for Che throughout the years, it's built up to a sobriety program. I go to the jail and I talk to the people in the jail. I go to the recovery centers and I take people out of there and have them join Chiz for Che. So people are working, getting employability skills. They're learning trades. They're getting certified in running chainsaws or running equipment. What started out in just my tour van, because like I had a 16-passenger white tour van. You know those Yiga vans that they drive around and they pick up people? Like. That's the kind of van I had, you know? People weren't sure because that's the only ride I had. I didn't even have a chainsaw or an axe or anything. So I took that van and I took the 16-passenger van out. And what I did was I took the back seats out, right? So it was a 16-passenger van, but it could only fit 10 Navajos. So after taking that all out, I was able to put like a whole cord of wood in there. And I didn't even know what a cord of wood was at the time. And I just went up to the mountain and got Gagi Chiz, which is crow wood in Navajo, or you can call it Sani Chiz, which is old lady wood. It was just wood branches. That's all I filled it up with, was branches. And I just slowly went out to places and created a pathway for me to find these individuals that were in need. And every single time, not has ever been a time in my whole Chiz for Che career that creator has never put me in the right place. I've always come across elders that needed firewood. Like they were either burning clothes, phone books, pieces of the furniture to stay warm. And, you know, they had no resources, no help. And that, for me, gave me so much back, because that was like my new addiction. Like I wanted to save everybody. That was the big thing. So my friends felt that too. And they were going through sobriety with me. And it was a support system. We were away from the distractions. We were working and building something and becoming valuable again. Because at that time, prior to that, I wasn't a high-valued man. Today, I feel like I'm a high-valued man now.
Yes.
And with that, I understand my worth. I understand my boundaries. I understand where my goals and dreams are going. And I understand like the things I don't want in my life as well. So now, going through the different changes, because things happen. Think people pass, people move on, people decide they don't want you anymore. And that's a tough thing to swallow, because I was in a 20-year relationship and she was all I knew. So within that time frame, it was done. It was over. And I didn't expect it. I didn't expect it to be where it was. So this past year was my best year of productivity, because through heartbreak and heartache, we did 8,000 loads of firewood.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I got the calluses to prove it. Right? But you think about the people that are selling the firewood out there, like the actual wood haulers, they sell them pretty cheap sometimes, like 100 to 150 bucks. That's in my area of Gallup, they sell the firewood for that much, a truckload, like flat, just up to the bed level of a full-size truck. It's $100 to $150. and you go to Flagstaff, it's double that price. So you're hitting about $400 for a load of wood. So multiply that either or by 800. You're talking about a lot of money there. So over the years, I've calculated that within the time frame of a decade of Chich for Che, our team has given out $6.8 million worth of firewood to the Navajo people and Hopi people.
Mm.
And so now we're able to collaborate with other organizations. We finally got Navajo Nation to go under our wing here. And that they're not on our wing. They're under our wing because I want to keep them accountable because they needed help with their emergency management. There wasn't any big emergency management plan. So we stepped in to really help them out. We changed a lot of policies with the government that they had with the Navajo people and indigenous people all over. So Chich for Che is expanding into other reservations because of the policy changes that we had. And this project that we have is called Wood for Life. I have some really great friends in forestry and the federal side that were able to help change these policies, because before it was like, we'll cut all this wood, thin out the stuff, and create a prescribed burn. And it was pretty much a big F you to the Native people because they couldn't get the wood. Mm. So now it's like, you know, let us have it. Let us take control of these lands that are ours. Even though they're federal, they're still our land. We'll take care of it. We'll bring a sustainability of reforestation to the area. And so like it's grown so much to the point where now we're working with forestry. Now we're certified to, you know, do stuff on federal lands and move semi-trucks of wood instead of my old tour van. So a lot of things happen. And all of our team, they got pro saws and they're working with pro gear and they're all pro certified. So if they decide to move on to do other things with other groups, you know, they can. So, but we're the one that's shining bright right now just because of all the years that we put in. There's some other groups out there that have picked up over the years too, which is good to see too, because we need more. There's a lot of land to cover. And for those that don't know Navajo Nation, it's a 400-mile radius. So that's from any point on the res and it expands to a big area. So we have a lot of land to cover. A lot of elders in need. 70% of the Navajo Nation doesn't have running water, doesn't have utilities, doesn't have the amenities that we would need to have just the basics of living. So these are the real realities. And so we were living in the pandemic before the pandemic was a pandemic.
Right, and, absolutely. And
we were doing all the pandemic stuff before it was even a trend or a cool thing to do. So we're still doing it.
Well, congratulations. And thank you to all your team for helping you, being standing there by you. And I think it's just a beautiful story. I love how you calculated the cost, $6.8 million. That's amazing. What would you, thinking about the, you know, 14 years of doing this, there's got to be at least one elder that just really touched your heart when you gave wood or connected to them. Do you mind sharing a little story about that?
I'd say my favorite elder is Mr. John Kinsel. He is an amazing guy. I'm pretty sure he broke a lot of hearts in his younger years, but he's just a solid dude to be bros with. And our friendship has spanned for many years. And it was just one of those relationships where it started off just not knowing each other. You know, there was a lot of barriers because of the time differences in our ages and then also like language as well. And then the other thing is the physicality of like him having a hard time hearing. But over the time frame, we've been able to have a lot of really awesome conversations about his time in the military, because he is one of two remaining Navajo code talkers.
Mm.
And he had his birthday this year, so he's 106 years
old.
Yeah. He lives out in Lukachigai, Arizona, and lives in a little cabin. And so throughout the years, we're able to build a new roof on top of his cabin that he built in the 50s. So a lot of stuff like that, you know, just kind of like you take in the good and the bad with it, because you want to be a positive in the moment. But you look at the reality is, okay, we got one of our national treasures, guy, war hero. And here he is like struggling to have a nice roof on us. And through our team efforts, it's not just firewood that we provide. We're able to provide food, water, and also the new roof thing. So there's a lot of things we don't really promote a whole lot, because, again, it's really tough to promote things online with Chich for Che, because every time I would post something about it, it's a mass of hundreds and hundreds of emails that come in, like Shishan, which means I need, how about me kind of thing. And And sometimes they don't need it. They just want free stuff. And I love our people, but that's one of the downfalls with our people is like we want handouts a lot and not really getting involved. And I'm down to help out because for some reason they think like I'm a candygram of wood too. A lot of these men in-laws that are out there, like, hey, I got a girlfriend and I wanna like surprise her with wood. And sometimes they'll trick us and trick me and they'll like roll up and they're like, where's the grandma? Oh, I don't know. And then the guy's like, oh, yeah, I got it for you, babe. And I'm like, ah. It's like, what the heck? So things like that, like, okay, let's talk about this, dude. Let's sit back and say, okay, what can we do to make this right? Because I understand you what you're trying to do. That makes sense. It's cool. But come out with us. Come out with us and haul the wood. And if you're not an elder, come out and work with us and we'll send a load with you. We'll deliver it, those kind of things. So it's a tough deal because, like, you know, with social media posting things, it's you get that kind of weird attraction. When people ask, like, how can they help Chish for Che? I'd say do your work at home. Like, go out your front door, see what your neighbor needs. It's not the sense because sometimes people, like, think, oh, well, I know this elder and they need help. There's thousands, literally thousands. And it can get really overwhelming knowing that there's thousands of elders right now that are cold. And that can really stress you out. So it's like, okay, well, are you helping or are you just being in the way?
I love that. I love that you said, it doesn't even have to be with Chish for Che, just who's next door, who's in your community, because it's even connection. I feel like the elders want to connect. They want to talk. They need that human connection. Just visiting somebody and connecting with them is a lot that can help somebody. And I appreciate you mentioning this project, how it started and what it's done for you and what it's done for others who supported you. Every time you return home in the mountains, it's healing and it's offering you new insight, new ways of reflecting on what you've learned and what you're gaining and how you want to come out of it. Just appreciate you being such a good relative. You model what a good relative is and reminding all of us about how those simple acts, that's what love is about. That's what love is. So as we wrap up, I'm just curious, at this point in your life, what are you continuing to learn about yourself?
I have a really vulgar point of view on one. But okay. I'm not going to say it because...
Well, say it. No filters, you said.
Well, we have a young one here.
Gavin, can you handle it? I think you can handle it.
I can handle it. I've been through enough.
Okay, Gavin. Okay, this is for you, Gavin. This is life advice from Uncle Lauren. Laurenology here.
Sounds good.
Nully is a she. I think you're a she. Mm-hmm. So I think you're Nully, right?
Let's see. So you're a she on what side?
His dad's side. Okay. So his Nully.
You're Nully.
His Nully is a she.
Okay. Yeah, so I'd be your grandpa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. Yeah.
So this story is for you, Nully Yeja.
Thank you, grandpa.
So this story is for you. Don't get horny. That's my advice, and that's my statement for learning. Just don't get horny. And I'd say that a lot because I used to run a treatment center in Gallup. I was the director for RMCH Hospital. And I never, well, not I never. Like, I knew that that's where I wanted to work when I was younger. Like, I had this, like, idea, like, I don't know how I'm going to do it. You know, I got to get all these degrees and whatever to get to that point. But I knew I wanted to run that hospital one day. So my whole career in professionalism career, I was a probation officer, compliance officer, and case manager and director for the McKinley County. Then I helped with the DWI task force. And then after that, I started doing stuff with addictions and helping out run a treatment center for the hospital. Throughout that time frame, that was always my biggest speech was don't get horny, whatever. Like it that was like a weird thing because I've been celibate for a very long time, even before my long-term relationship ended. Like, it was just coming to that point where it was like the downfall was coming. And I didn't want it to come, but I felt it coming. And I just saw, it's like I saw her falling in love. And I did. And it did happen. And I had to admit those things. So going through that disconnect and going through that phase put me in a spot of loneliness. I had to eat my own words throughout my healing journey throughout the beginning because when I when we ended, I told myself, I'm not going to be bitter about this. I'm going to be better. And I'm going to strive to do whatever I need to do to heal. And one of the things about that is, like, with addiction, when people are getting sober, I always say, don't get into a relationship within a year, because you're trying to find out who you are. You're trying to feel everything out. So as I've seen people in recovery, and when I was running the treatment centers, it was like eHarmony for adults. It was like they're all rabbits and they're all into each other. And like it was such a weird thing to see them just kind of all horned out, you know, and just wanting to be with each other. And it's like, don't be horny. So with that whole thing too, it's like, now that I'm in this phase, I was like, I had to eat my words on that too, because there's people that come into your life once they see, like, oh, well, he's a high-valued guy or she's a high-valued woman. Like, people want to get involved with that, but not really wanting to put in the work for themselves. So that loneliness can be taken advantage of. So I always say, throughout that process of what I've learned within the year, was also eating my words of, like, taking on the aspects of your emotions. That feeling of being loved, that feeling of wanting to be touched, because that's one of the signs of love is being touched, you know, having a hug, a simple handshake, things like that. We need that kind of comfort. But sometimes that can be miscommunicated with our brain and our heart, because the biggest distance to travel is from the brain to the heart. And a lot of times I just want to be like a puppy, like puppies everywhere, just love unconditionally. They don't care. If you beat them up or whatever, they got run over, things happen. They just want to love to the end. They want to feel loved, and just be happy. So in that mindset of don't get horny, it's that same thing of accepting where you're at that point and not giving in to those little temptations, because you have to hold out and not get taken advantage of and understand yourself. And I talk to a lot of guys individually and in my groups about post-nut syndrome. Like, you don't want to be in that sense of just giving yourself away sexually. You don't want to give yourself away to anybody. So celibacy is like one of my big things. One of my big boundaries is being celibate and creating that line of, okay, well, if anybody's interested in me, it's going to have to be a probation period with you. Like, 100, it used to be 90, then I extended it to 120 days because I need to make sure. No saying I love you. I'm not saying any of that. No sex, no kissing. Like, just try to see if you can hack through that. Because, like, in today's world, it's like being patient with yourself too and, like, expecting what you're worth. Because being sober and being recently single, it's very difficult to find somebody that's not involved in that. There's hardly any sober women out there. And same goes for men. I get a lot of good women that tell me, I need good men. Where are the good men at? And I'm like, well, I'm one. But the other thing is, like, I'm looking for good men too to help me with Chish for Trade, to help me with these projects. And it's hard to find good men. It's very rare. But overall, patience and understanding your worth is the main thing of it.
Thank you. Wow. Yeah, really, really touching for sure in terms of
that. Don't say touching while we're talking about all the other stuff, because people get confused online. They're gonna be like, oh, he's talking about horny and he just said very touching here.
Well, I just say
right, because they can't see. They're all in their imagination right now with their headphones the podcast, on. They're driving down the road.
They'll be like, what? Oh, okay, well, let me retract that. Very inspiring, very inspirational to really see it in that perspective. That I've never heard of that analogy, but I respect it. Yeah, I haven't heard anyone say it that way, and I really do. And I feel like a lot of people should not giving in to those little temptations and learning how to control yourself and your mentality and your soul and your spirit and your environment, because that really can affect the way your future works and also the present moment. I definitely appreciate you going into depth about what you mean by that. I think a lot of people would get a kick out of that. But also a really good perspective change within another way to see it and understand. There's a lot to add to everything you're saying throughout this whole podcast. I mean, we would just be going in circles.
Thank you, Gavin. Well, you all heard it from Lauren. Don't get horny. I also want to give you an opportunity to say anything else that you want. This is your final words of wisdom. And then we have like a fire round of questions.
Words of wisdom for me is always that I don't have a whole lot of time on earth. And with that time frame, like, it's always unpredictable and what's going to happen. And I always talk about the aliens coming for me. The aliens are going to one day land, and they might land here outside of this place in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, or in Gallatin, New Mexico, or up in the mountains. I don't know where it's going to happen at, but this alien ship's going to land, and this doorway is going to open, and fog is going to come out with all these different lights and EDM music going on. And there's going to be this alien hand that comes out, and his finger's going to come out. He's going to finger me to come over to him. And I'm going to be like, all right, I'm coming. Here I go. So I'm going to not even say bye to my mom. I'm not going to say bye to any more puppies. I'm not going to say bye to anybody. I'm just going to go. And I know that it's time for me to go. And I'm not going to say anything. And a lot of people aren't willing to do that. A lot of people aren't willing to feel like they've done enough. You know, maybe they want to spend time with their mom. Or maybe they want to spend time on doing this project that they need to do. Something that they didn't finish. But for me, I feel like in my lifetime, I've done a lot. And I've done more than I should, but I'm still here. So that means I still haven't done more than I should. So I'm always over serving, always doing above and beyond for people, because in the end, it's about what they say about you. It's about the stories they'll tell you. It was not going to be like all the money that you made or the fancy stuff that you had or didn't have. It's about how you made them feel. And so in the end, we're all going to be a good memory or a bad one. So that's really up to us. And I tell people to strive to be a good memory always, and to know that in the end, all you have is your word. So remember that because you said so is why it's getting done.
Because you said so. That's right. And be a good relative. So thank you so much. I have a fine round of questions. Nickname.
Dola.
Dola, you need to let folks know what that means.
That means bull. That's what my family calls me.
One quick question is, like, I was reading when I was doing research, what was your involvement in, like, Red Dead Redemption?
Red Dead Redemption, I did the motion capture and voiceover for the character Peta. So I worked on that for 5 years. It was an 8-year project, but I had to sign the most excruciating NDA contract, non-disclosure agreement contract about the whole thing until it was done. So I couldn't say anything while I was working on it. But it was a cool experience because they put sensors on your body and on your face. And so they did the facial recognition of all the different emotions. So every voiceover that I could do, I gave them. So like anything from, hey, I'm an old chan, just kind of talking about my life right now because I love all of you guys so much. Or just whatever I can do vocally. Like, I just love voice acting too. Wow. It's like a big part. So I've done like 4 cartoons, and I've done other video games too. Empire Sin was a cool one because I spoke all that in Navajo. My friend John Romero, who is the OG creator for the video game Doom. You ever heard of that series?
I've heard of it.
Yeah. So he's the guy that created Doom, and he hit me up and he's like, dude, I want you to be part of this. We had a FaceTime with each other and we're both freaking out because I was like, you look like the older version of me. And he's like, you look like the younger version of me. And I'm like, oh crap. So him and his wife, Brenda, are so awesome. And they invited me to be part of this game called Empire Sin. So I played a 1920s gangster in Chicago. Wow. And with Tommy gun, and all my lines were in Navajo.
That's so everything. Cool.
Yeah. So it's a fun little one of those Easter eggs you find in the game. But with Red Dead Redemption, that was huge because that makes me cool among the kids that I work with. It's like, oh, you're from Red Dead, that guy from Red Dead. You know, it's like it makes them want to work with me. It makes them want to feel like, oh yeah, cool. It's a nice thing. But I never played the game. I seen it and I watched it being played, and it's a really great visuals. I mean, it has like still the best graphics since then. But I'm really happy to been a part of that project.
Nice. Yeah, I saw that. I've only played the first one. I've never played the second one. But anyways, yeah, I saw that and I was like, oh, that's so cool, because I beat the first one. And I'm like, yeah, it's so cool because I've been a fan of that game for sure.
Favorite karaoke?
Oh, my gosh. I have so many karaoke songs in my head that I want to sing every single time. And then when it comes time to it, I space out and I'm like, oh, my gosh, what songs do I want to do? And there's some, I like a lot of hurting songs, and I'm not hurt. I'm not hurting anymore. I'm good. I'm happy. And so, but I love these songs. There's like Steven Tyler is one of my favorite like singers. He's the guy from Aerosmith, and I love a lot of his songs. So, like there's that one that goes, "There goes my girlfriend. There's another diamond ring." You ever heard that one? "Girl, before I met you, I want to sing those songs so bad, but it just, I'm afraid people are going to be like, damn, Lauren's really hurting. He's all missing her. Oh, poor thing. Look at him. He's like crying up there. His heart is so broken. Oh my gosh. I want to sing those kind of songs, but I don't want, in my head, that's where I'm going. I'm like, oh crap. I'll just sing "Man in a Box" by Alice in Chains. But yeah, I mean, I love karaoke. It's one of my favorite things to do when I get a chance to. And it's just fun. It's just really fun. So I don't have a particular favorite song. But if anything, it's more of the hurting tunes.
I love it. I love karaoke too. I did my first one when I turned 50 last year. And
no way.
Yeah, it was
50.
Yeah, I'm 51. So I'm a year older, but I was excited. I practiced.
She's lying, guys. She's lying.
What's the first thing you grab in the morning?
First thing I grab in the morning? My looks. Just kidding. I really try to not grab my phone. That's one thing I try not to do. I tell people, like, you know, because people want to know, like, how do you get so successful and stuff? And I'm like, I do a thing called 5 for 5. So I take 5 minutes out of my morning right after I wake up, like immediately, 5 things for 5 minutes. I write down 5 things I want to get done for the day, and that's it. And then from there, I'll go grab my thing to go use the restroom or grab my phone. And it does. And I truly try to grab water. That's for sure. And try to get my insides going fluid wise and stuff like that before I really eat anything. And a lot of times people put bad stuff in their body before doing that. I just want my body to be flowing physically and then get myself ready mentally and all the other things.
What's your favorite part of your body?
My favorite part of my body is my brain.
That is
my favorite part, because without it, I would have not have lasted so long.
Those were my fire rounds. I appreciate you so much, Lauren. You know what? I'm glad it was almost a year later that we had this podcast, because I know last year in May when we connected, it would have been a different podcast.
It would have. Because last year, you know, I was going through that breakup, and I also lost her as my best friend, but also lost my best friend to her as well. So it was like I lost two people at the same time. And it was really rough because we were so close. And everybody always saw us together, and it was always like, oh, where is this person? Where's that person? And I'm like, so I went through a big transition of like how I felt, but now I'm more at peace these days. And it's really strange to go through that moment of growth. And I feel like everybody's healing process is a lot different. And I look at it like the gym. I put myself through as much pain as possible, even if it's with baby weights. I get the full stretch. I get the contraction, and I squeeze the heck out of my muscle until the point where it feels like I'm going to explode. So we don't put through ourselves through enough pressure and sit through those moments enough to actually get the full benefit of growing and healing from it. And a lot of people just like to baby their wounds and hold their wounds and just kind of coast out through their days. And so for me, it was like, I got to get through this. I got to push through everything I need to do to get through what I need to do. But luckily, at the same time, I got booked for a lot of graduations. A lot of graduations during that time frame. And so I was speaking in different parts of the country, and I didn't lie. I gave him the truth. You're going to go through breakups. You're going to go through things, people failing you, people disappointing you, people disrespecting you, people not appreciating who you are. And that's going to happen throughout your time frame. And that's stuff that they don't tell you. And that really reality, the reality is like everybody wants you to go to college and do good and be a good person. But like, where's the in-between stuff? Like the stuff that's really going to hit you hard in life that people don't talk, that they don't prepare you for, like a heartbreak. So, and then showing that true emotion in that, and how do you overcome that? So I'm really grateful that I have a lot of kids that look up to me. I have a lot of young men that really look up to me. And with that, like, I want to show our Native men, this is how you handle this. and also the young women too, that, you know, there's much work to be done on our end and then their end in the sense of healing. So you got to face those painful moments and go through them. And
you do. You do. We both know that. We've sat through our pain and we've, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a process to do. And people like say, oh, time heals it. But it's really not true. Like, it's you that has to take initiative to heal what you want in yourself.
Absolutely. Gavin, thank you so much for being a co-host. I enjoyed holding space with you. You're such a natural. I just want you to know that. And I appreciate you doing research and getting the space set up for us and just being here fully present. And thank you. And Lauren, we just want to thank you again for coming all the way out here to be with us in our home and just having a conversation and sharing so much wisdom. We wish you continued healing. We wish you all the success in the movie and your new band that you've come together and for your community projects.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you everybody for listening and supporting this too.
All right, everyone. We'll see you next month, and take care of yourself. And don't forget, you matter. And we love you.